So, welcome to the Culture Crush. We're talking about issue 7, which is an incredible issue with stories from all around the world. And I'm here with Jay. Say hi, Jay.
Hi, everyone.
Okay. And Jay just got back from Beirut, Lebanon, where he went with an incredible artist. And they documented youth culture and culture in general, I think, over the course of a few weeks. This is Jay's first time working on the print issue with us, which I'm so excited about. I feel like you're getting roped in more and more to all of the things that we're doing, which I love. So tell us about the experience and sort of like what made you want to go and do that. So tell us the whole story.
I decided to try to produce a photo essay and short film on a city that always fascinated me and a region that really fascinated me, the Middle East and Beirut, Lebanon. I talked to my friend Georgi Esparza, who's an artist I really like and respect, and I wanted him to come with me in this adventure because I love his vision of the urban life and youth in general, and I've seen him doing it in New York and documenting his experience here. And I was like, if I give him the chance to spend some time in a city that is as exotic and foreign and complex as Beirut, something magical will come out of it.
Well, and, has he done stuff before? I know he lives here in New York, but had you seen work that he had done that were of him sort of having those experiences in other cities, or was that just based on what you see him do in New York? Or
yeah, I mean, we met in Tokyo, so I've seen him like doing great work and getting really inspired by Tokyo, but the expectation and complexity of Beirut, I think, is on another level.
Right.
And also in terms of production, just like being there and trying to have access to the right people, have enough story to really make to understand the full spectrum of what's going on there, and trying to stay true to our experience and to what's going on there. It's complex, and there's expectation, and there's pressure. So that was a challenge, but I think I'm super happy about the human experience that we lived, and we still have a lot of raw footage, and it's going to be like an ongoing process. But I'm stoked about what we shot.
Right. So you did stills, you did a lot of video stuff, and then as part of the film series that we're doing here along with Issue 7, with Pro 8 out in Burbank, and I gave everybody a bunch of Super 8 film and a camera, hoping that they would bring back some magic and so that we could cut those things into little postcards from all of the places. So, and the footage looks amazing. So thank you, Jay, for doing that as well.
That was fun to shoot. And that was fun to have a camera that looked like a machine gun.
Right. I also got to see some of, the behind the scenes of Joji's shooting. Yeah. So that was really interesting to see from that side as well. So how did it go? I mean, we're looking at the pictures right now, so I think it probably went quite well.
It went great. I'm glad we stayed 2 weeks. We could have stayed more. We don't have a huge budget. We don't have like local production team. It's just the two of us meeting people and asking favor and asking people to tell us their story and introduce as their cousin that will know someone that has an interesting experience. And, it's like mapping the town and being out there from the nightclub to the refugee camp and trying to really make sense of all this mess, and this beautiful mass. And, you know, it took, every day was intense. And it's like, you arrive in a city that you never, I never been to Beirut, that was my first time. It's not the most foreigner-friendly city. You know, every, going from A to B is a flight with taxis, with, you know, there's no public transportation. So everything, it's a struggle, but out of the struggle, this beautiful thing happening and beautiful story that emerged from it. And there's no, you know, in the beginning, people were very suspicious about what we're doing, because it's a land of spies. No one is doing documentary in Beirut about youth culture. There's barely no tourists or foreigners like us. There's spies, there's people that walk in the business of war. Damascus is 100 miles away. You know, it's still a very like tough region. There's checkpoints everywhere, you know, people have different interests in different neighborhoods. So yeah, in the beginning, people look at us like, what are you doing here? And slowly we meet the right people that kind of vouch for us, and doors open, and you know, the whole story can start taking shape. And yeah, the circle open, people trust us more, and they can like give us their take on their Beirut, you know?
No, I mean, I think you're right about the 2 week thing. I mean, I, as you know, I've done trips like that also where it's just, yeah, I mean, you don't have any like pre-production team landing there and sussing everything out and making sure everything's well lit and perfectly lit. But yeah, it kind of like gives a pressure on you that, you know, it's like you don't go, oh, those guys said we could go check this out tomorrow, but let's do it next Friday. You know what I mean? It's just like you have to, like every opportunity, every door that opens like a little, like you run in because you're just like, what could this be? What could this be? And that's must have been very exciting.
It was very exciting. Yeah. And you know, you meet people, and then there's days where you meet someone, it's like, I'm going to take you there, and there, and you're excited. And then the guy never contacts you again. And you're like, fuck, I lost my day. So then you're like, the day after, you're like, that cannot happen again. We are on tight schedule. So you book three different meetings.
Thinking two aren't going to work out. Yeah, and if one does, cool.
Exactly. Right, and then you go with your gut feeling and you follow the guy that you think will bring you to the most interesting places. And I mean, that was an amazing human experience. Everyone should go to Beirut once in their life. It's a unique city, amazing nightlife. People are really having fun in the organic way at night, which is, you know, something that's sometimes lost in the big city in the West. The city is beautiful. The Mediterranean is right there. The food is the best in the region. So, yeah. Whether or not you want to know more about the politics and the history of the city, just for good times, it's a good enough reason to go check it out.
Right. So tell us what else did you find? Like, tell us about some of the experiences of that, especially the ones that are in the pictures in the story. You know, so what was there about youth culture? Like, what did you find?
So what really like struck me about a city like Beirut is like how connected the youth is. You meet like privileged kids that they took us around. They stoked to have us in town because they want to share their Lebanon with us. But also they have the distance to understand that their own country, they understand London, they understand New York, they travel there often, and they it's easy conversation with them. They have filtered already their feelings and what they think about Lebanon, and you know, through them we have a view of the situation there. And obviously they speak English and French, and they read the same thing that we read, watch the same movie that we watch, and so that's cool to talk to those people. But also you went to the refugee camp in Shatila, where it's like mostly like Palestinian refugee and now a lot of Syrian refugees out there. And we're talking about like 25,000 people, 30,000 people living in a block the size of Fort Greene Park, you know. And you see like kids, they're like 15 years old and they wear like fake Yeezy Adidas, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's like that shoes has been released last year. People are lining up in New York, but the kid is rocking the bootleg version.
Right.
In no-low zone in the middle of Beirut. So how fast like pop culture travels is fascinating. And then also, you know, within Beirut, there's like 10 different way, 100 different way to live as a young man, a young woman. And some translate to the West, some doesn't. But the things that is very universal is how, you know, kids want to look good and have fun. And that translates in the refugee camp, in the privileged youth, and, you know, no matter what's your religion, your background, your social, economical, you know, situation, kids are kids. Right. They're the same in New York.
When you when you describe the refugee camp, you called us a no something zone. What was that?
A no low zone.
No low zone.
Yeah.
What
does
that mean?
Because basically, it's like in the 30s, a lot of Palestinians have been displaced and they moved to Lebanon and Beirut, and they've been placed in a camp in the middle of Beirut called Shatila. And because the Lebanese government, they didn't want to unbalance the country that was like 20%, 30% Christian and, you know, a lot of Sunni Muslim and Shia Muslim. So it was a very complex balance already in the country. So they didn't want to unbalance this whole equation that was somehow working by adding, you know, 500,000 Sunni Muslim to the equation. So all the Palestinians that came at that time were placed in a camp, and Palestine is not a country, so they obviously don't have Palestinian passport, but they've never been given Lebanese paper. Mm-hmm. So they live, and now we're talking about the grandparents moved there, or their parents, and the teenager and the young man and woman that I've met in their 20s, they've been born and raised in Lebanon in the camp. And they have no citizen rights. That, you know, they I don't know how to say in English, but they're apatrid, like no country.
Yeah.
And within that camp, you know, there's a political party that kind of rule it, but the police doesn't really get in there. The Lebanese people never get in there, and they kind of like govern themselves and make sure they're safe at least.
Oh, so you mean no law zone? Law. Yeah. Okay. Oh, okay. Yeah. Right. So it's just like it's its own sort of contained West world.
Exactly. And that remind me of another fascinating story that always like interested me is like in Kowloon in Hong Kong, when the British took over Hong Kong, they forget to include in the contract with China a block in Kowloon. And that block became, so it was a Chinese block in the middle of British Hong Kong. And China didn't want to take care of it. It's like, you guys, fuck this up. You have this block. We're not going to try to govern this piece of land in your territory.
Right.
And the British didn't really want to deal with it. So in the middle of Hong Kong, there was a huge block that was also like no government, no police. And it ended up being 50,000 people living in those cubicles. And that was like a city within the city. It's called Kowloon Wall City. And the image, there's a photo book released about that place that's been destroyed in 93, I think. And it reminded me a lot about Shatila because, like, you know, it starts with tents and things like that, but then they built on top of it. There's no urbanization plan, of course, and life happened and society.
Communities get built, like it or not.
Exactly. Right. And
communities and culture erupts by itself.
Exactly.
Whatever that is. Mm. So, I mean, so I guess that's, you know, to sum up kind of, I think what you're saying is that, so the first experience was like people that you had, that on the surface, it seemed like you had stuff in common with them because they had experience of the Western world. So you were not surprised by the cultural commonalities, but then, I mean, so that's an incredible statement, but then even to relate to these other people and you're seeing that like, they have the knockoff of the same boot and they know exactly, da, da, da. So it's like, you know, we have, though we think they're so foreign to us, we do have cultural commonalities with them.
Of course. And there's like pop culture and sports are the common thread of all youth. Like I play football with those kids in the refugee camp. We talk about the Boston, because Barcelona and Real Madrid almost like live their rivalry inside the camp. You see so much Barcelona jersey, so much Madrid jersey, and you talk to kids, some kids like I like Messi, some kids like I like Ronaldo, and you know you communicate with them and you share your opinion through sports and through music and that's the beautiful thing about youth is like. There's a world universal connection that kind of disappear when you grow old and you build your own kind of like zone and political statements and you know so that was cool playing football with those kids that's like kind of a light in the dark place you know
right
see them laugh and score and you know celebrate that was very cool.
That was really cool. Yeah. And then, what about some of the other, you mentioned that you went to Southern Lebanon for a sec.
Yeah.
What was that like?
So Southern Lebanon was a side trip because we really wanted to focus in Beirut. I'm fascinated by life in cities. And so a few friends of us was like, you should go to the Hezbollah Museum in South Lebanon because it's interesting. And we took a bus to Saida, which is one of the biggest cities in the South. Just the bus ride was insane. It's like this is a van of like 10 people jumping in and out of the van and they drive like crazy in the highway. That was the scariest moment of the trip for me, like the way they drive.
Right.
And then we arrived to Saida and we took a cab for like an hour up the mountain. And the cab driver was amazing, and his story was amazing. And then we visited the Hezbollah Museum, and it's when you arrive in the mountain, you feel really isolated and you feel watched and controlled because that's a stronghold. That's where the Hezbollah is from, the South Lebanon, and everybody there supports Hezbollah and are involved somehow. And you know, you arrive in a tiny village and they pull you over and they ask the driver, who's those guy in the back, you know?
Right.
And you feel that you've been watching. And so it's a bit more tense. You still feel safe, but somehow, because you're not in the, I mean, that's a personal feeling that I have. I rarely get scared in city because I always feel like the humanity and the amount of people around me will save me. But in the forest and in the mountain, I always feel isolated. Like if something goes wrong, I'm on my own. So that's the feeling I had. But then we arrived in the museum and the museum was like, you know, it's like official Lebanese tourism board.
Right.
Approved, you know, it's right. Like they spent money on it. It was like a very official and beautiful place. It was there was a little bit of propaganda, the way you can see in a lot of different like political organization museum, but there was also a lot of reproduction and artwork. They commissioned artists to symbolize the victory of the Hezbollah on the Israeli army in 2006.
Propaganda, yeah.
Yeah, but in an artistic way, which is interesting because it is like, they spend like hundreds of thousands of dollars to produce those artwork. And that's interesting. Who goes there? I mean, who goes to an hour of Saida in that mountain to watch?
Obviously people who dig what they do, right? Obviously, but, not, you know.
Yeah, but it's still like, you don't imagine it's that, you know, this line anytime. You know, it's right. it's a strange way of you know, you imagine they will spend that much money to do something in Beirut, maybe what is more impact and more vis- but I mean it was and we had a guide, so the best part is we had the guide that speak English that was explaining to us his view on the whole thing, and that was like a very interesting conversation.
Okay, right. Right, so let's stick to culture and stay off of politics. Stay off of Mideast. We are not going to solve Mideast politics at the Culture Crush. That's definitely for
especially
sure.
Especially in the Middle East.
No, especially in the Middle East. So tell me more of your thoughts about the mix of people. Were there things that you found about, look, you talked about Beirut being it's these people. There was already this balance, and then there's the camp, and then there's. So was there something about it that is like feels like it's gonna break, or is it like a feeling of this is how it is, and this is, and it does it? Did it feel like it? It was there one overriding culture that you felt, or was it really like? You know, I mean, okay, for example, you know, something that always shocked me about the formation of the EU. So let's get back to Europe, you know. So you know how Europe can be. I mean, you're in one town and, you know, the architecture looks a certain way and they speak a certain language and they eat a certain kind of food. And then literally, like, you go like a mile down the road and then you're in another country, they're speaking a different language. They're so it's like, it's really funny that, you know, people think of Europe as one thing, but it, to me, it's so not ever one thing. So, I mean, it sounds like Beirut is like the, all of the Middle East, like all in like one place. So what was that like?
And Europe also, because
Cause it's sort of the Europe of the Middle East. Yeah.
That's, they described themselves and in the 70s was the Paris of the Middle East, and the they call it the Arabic Riviera also. And you know, it's small. So Beirut is a small town. It's like maybe max 2 million people. There's a very modern skyscraper and like beautiful design condominium part of town. And then, you know, two blocks from that, you get the old town that's been bombed hundreds of times, and you see bullet impact on every building. And so the scars of the civil war that was from 78, I believe, or like late 70s to almost like late 80s, 90s, the scar of that civil war are still in the building now. You can see it. You see all the skyscraper that have been bombed, all the hotel that got destroyed at that time, they're still up. So walking down the street of Beirut, you feel the history, the weight of the history. The people there are realist, but optimistic, I think. They know the future is not necessarily going to be better, but they prepare to whatever's going to come. And they're like very like, okay, maybe, because they had war, whether it was a civil war, it was a war against Israel, that every 5-10 years, there's something happening. Even if it's only 2 weeks or 30 days, there's something. So they know something is going to come again, but that doesn't prevent them to sleep well at night, to party all night. And, you know, you meet some of the kids, they were like 2006 when Israel bombed Beirut. That was the best summer ever for me, because people were like, people in the south were suffering, but people in Beirut was like, it's, you know, it's tense, and but let's party and drinks and celebrate life, because who knows what's happening tomorrow. So you have this like, always this like knife, sword above your head, that make them like try to live life at 100% every day, you know?
Okay, yeah.
I don't think it will ever break. There's too much interest and money for the world to let that happen. And the country, and especially the city, is so divided, and all those communities have huge support from outside. And that is a curse for the progress of town, but it's also a blessing because no one will let Beirut be destroyed or something like that. You know,
right.
It's like when two, like when in Pakistan and India both have the atomic bomb.
Right.
It's terrible and scary, but you know, it's so scary that that probably prevents them to start a war, because a war will mean the total destruction of the
right.
whole region.
Did you find, like, when in terms of nightlife and things like that, that it was it segregated, or were there places where you go and there'd be like somebody like this, somebody like that? Were there places where people just went to say, you know, fuck all this politics, let's just mingle?
Both. There's like definitely the rich kid club that was like super expensive to get in, and you know, techno music and you know, vodka Red Bull and gin tonic, and you know, girls trying to get rich guy, you know, that exists. And there's a lot of those. There's the club for the intelligentsia and the kids with foreign education that look like every cool bar in Le Marais or in, you know, in Lower East Side and things like that. So it's, you know, interesting to witness and see that that exists also in the region. And there's like few good spots that usually are very traditional in their architecture and in their history. And those spots usually attract the hipster kid with foreign education, the local Arab youth,
right.
and also the rich kid will go there because that's an authentic experience.
Right, it's edgy.
And those places, you see people of all religion and all social background party together, and that's the hope, really. At the end of the day, the fact that people in the country and the seas that divided can party together, that's the light at the end of the tunnel.
Right.
And even if when they wake up the day after, those differences still exist, at least there was some connection made then.
Right. So let's just really quickly just talk specifically about the specific pictures.
Mm-hmm.
Just so you can take me through, and so we know what we're looking at. So it starts off with the family.
Yeah. So the family was shot in Shatila in the refugee camp.
Okay.
So we're taking around for like a few hours by a young lady that worked in the association that organized football game. So she took us around and kind of vouched for us for to take picture in the camp. So that's one of them. The second one. Obviously, a close up. I will have to ask Georgie exactly where it was. Going up there, that's the kids, that's at the football pitch, the football playground where we play with the kids.
So that's also at the in the camp?
That was also in the camp.
Okay.
Yeah. This one is at the Blue Mosque. I don't even know the real name of the mosque, but it's like next to Rafik Hariri Square, there's like the main mosque.
Oh, we'll figure out what
it's
called.
The Sunni Mosque in Beirut. So that's inside. Below, it's two beautiful young lady that took good care of us, introduced us a lot of people. They're both Lebanese, educated outside of Lebanon. One
okay.
in Ivory Coast, there was one in Dubai. They're both back in Lebanon. And one is stylist and one is a fashion designer. So they have a very interesting perspective on the whole thing. Below is also, I think it's in downtown Beirut, in a very old neighborhood that where you can still see the scar of war. Up there is at the entrance of the camp, because the camp starts as a flea market kind of.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
And where all the people in the camp buy their daily needs. And that's the fragrance stand. So you can see like CK1 and
right.
some like Arabic fragrance and the extension inside that a little girl from the camp also. That's very good. Was very good with the camera. This one was just outside of the camp. This kid also like, he was like trying to, it was very hard to communicate with him because he speak English or French, and but he was very keen in following us and showing us cool stuff in his neighborhood.
Oh, that's cool.
And he spent like almost like an hour with us, very organically, and you know, and then he showed us his tattoo that he was very proud of. Speaking of the scar of the city, that building below is amazing, and it's really in the center of the city. And that flag, you barely see Hezbollah flag in downtown Beirut. Downtown Beirut is kind of that zone where it's like a neutral zone, and in the south, in Daria, South Beirut, you see a lot of Hezbollah propaganda in the south Lebanon also. But in downtown Beirut, almost nothing. And having a flag in front of that building was very unusual, and I think it was quite interesting to see.
Okay.
And below is two kids that I think is like we got it on video, and that's a still from the video, and that's like two young kids passing by in the street of Oshatsla, and they carry the stuffed animal, and it's like there's something innocent about it.
Right.
And the last one is in Rauche, which is the kind of the Corniche in Beirut, where the beach turned into the cliff, and there's a lot of like nightlife and bar and cafe where people gather, and you know, it's kind of like the Malecón in La Habana, you know. It's like a social place where people like watch the sunset and go for ice cream.
Right.
And that's the famous kind of like rock formation that we see, and the sunset with the barbed wire was kind of like
you know,
it remind you where you're at, even if you look at this beautiful scenery.
Right. So final thoughts. I mean, you felt like it was a success. I mean, but to me, it looks pretty damn successful.
Yeah, I mean. The human experience is everything. That's a success. Now we need to, that would be amazing to be able to present this body of work that we create out there in New York in January. I mean, are we going to do it? That's like a no-brainer. But that would be the amazing thing if we can, at the end of next year, go back to Beirut and introduce the thing that we felt in the work that we did to them in the gallery out there, and meet.
Great.
That would be great to share that with them. Ideally, I would like to cover a city or region or every year and do the same thing with Georgie every year or every 18 months, you know. Let's see what's
or
next.
Or every quarter when we do a new issue of the cult. No.
That'll be great.
Right, that'll
this
be
neighborhood
great.
In New York, even that's more like Dre's.
No, Andre's got this. This is his turf.
Yeah.
No, there's plenty of stuff to shoot in New York, but it's very exciting to see the relationship between all of the different artists that worked on this issue, and sort of their peek into the human experience through youth culture that's what this is. It's about the human experience, because that's the thing is, that's what the Culture Crush is. It's just falling in love with the human experience. Mm. And, cause God knows there's lots of other experiences out there. And, so we're just going to focus on that for right now. And, So I can't wait for everyone to see the pictures, and then hopefully we'll cut that short film together and give everybody sort of a different view and be truly multimedia as we are here. And thanks for coming.
Thank you for giving us the platform to show everything.
Okay, great. Till the next time.